Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Authors and Agents with Rose Quinn. Today, I have the author Bethany Mangle on the podcast. She is the author of Prepped, which is a book that is coming out tomorrow, actually, so make sure that you've got that on your pre-order list, your to-be-read list. She's going to tell us all about that novel and her experience through the publishing industry to this point, to having her book come out into the world. We also talk about her drafting style, whether she's more of a pantser, more of a planner, and she also shares something with us that you might not know about her. But before we get to know Bethany, I want to tell you about my favorite book of the week. I was lucky enough to get an ARC of The Girls Are All So Nice Here by Lori Elizabeth Flynn. That is a book that comes out March 9th by Simon & Schuster, and it is a pretty crazy mystery. It has dual timelines of, you know, the present day, this character, and then back in the past when she was at college, and these, like, kind of crazy things that happen. There are some, like, triggering things that happen. I mean, the girls are not very nice. You know, that title is a little deceiving. I think everybody knows girls can be pretty mean. But it was a really great thriller, really good mystery that was wrapped up in it, and, you know, the end had me, like, blown away, and I was, like, reeling from it for a couple days. I kept thinking about it, which is almost sometimes, you know, what you want, right? You want a book to kind of stick around in your mind. I'll read, like, the little pitch for you. It says, two former best friends return to their college reunion to find that they're being circled by someone who wants revenge for what they did 10 years before and will stop at nothing to get it. In this shocking psychological thriller about ambition, toxic friendship, and deadly desire. It's very, very good, so make sure that you put this one on your to-be-read list as well. And while you're doing that, let's go ahead and get to know Bethany Mangle. Bethany, can you start off by telling me about your novel, Prepped?
So it's about a teenage girl named Becca, and she's grown up in a community of doomsday preppers. But she doesn't really believe. And she takes care of her 10-year-old sister, Katie, who also kind of thinks, like, okay, this isn't real life. But then there is there's an accident, and it kind of starts to change her little sister's opinion about doomsday prepping and being kind of scared about what could happen in the future. So Becca kind of has a team up with Roy, who's her, like, prepper-selected boyfriend, and she starts to learn a lot more about him than she, you know, really ever suspected, that there's a lot more to him.
I love it. I love, you know, the idea of doomsday preppers. My mother and stepdad are very, like, not hardcore like this level, but, you know, have fantasized about the idea of it. And I love stories that kind of are around this sort of community. I think it lends for a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and I wrote it before the pandemic, so it was really interesting to look at everything that happened in 2020 and think, okay, well, you know what? Maybe hoarding toilet paper doesn't sound like such an out there practice right now.
Right. There's another book that's coming out this year in later this month, that is Rise of the Red Hand by Olivia Chadha. And it's very futuristic, future in the world, but it hit a little too close to home with a pandemic going through this community and, yeah, people hoarding things and, you know, mask wearing. And I was like, she totally, too, wrote it way long before, obviously, the pandemic started. But it's like it hit a little too close to home, you know? You're like, oh, gosh, I can see this happening.
Right. I totally understand.
Well, how exciting to have your book come out into the world, right? Like, I'm sure you just can't wait. So tell me a little bit about your journey to this point.
I would say that my journey was a little more unusual and definitely longer than most people. So I first started trying to get a literary agent when I was probably around 12. So I had my first full request around that time, like 12 or 13. And it was so long ago, not to date myself here, that I had to send in my manuscript in hard copy with another copy on a floppy disk.
Wow.
So it was, I think, about 13 years after that, that I had, like, I was at the skill level where I actually was able to get a literary agent and start to look at getting published as, like, something that could really happen. But it was a very, very long time for me.
But, I mean, the fact that you started querying and got a full request at that age is amazing. That's, like, tell everybody that. That's so cool. Well, tell me a little bit about how querying went for you, like how, what your approach was to it, and then maybe like your top tips for writers who are, you know, in the lovely querying trenches right now.
So my approach to querying was really chaotic because I did start so young. I didn't understand the process all the way. So as I got older and kept writing and kept doing it, I started to learn some of those, like you said, tips and tricks and things to avoid. And then I started to look at my friends or look up writers that I thought had a similar style and say, okay, well, I really like this person. Who is their agent? And I did a lot more homework and made everything more targeted. And then I ended up querying Jennifer Wills, who is my agent now. And she is wonderful. And it was just a perfect fit. So I would say that, like, my tip for any writers who are querying right now is to just basically be an internet stalker. Like, don't just read one opinion of an agent and think, oh, they're great, because there are agencies out there that aren't as reputable,
yeah,
or don't have the contacts that they need. And I remember as a writer rolling my eyes a little bit when people would say a bad agent is worse than no agent. And I kept thinking, that's ridiculous. I just want anybody. And as I started to understand more about what an agent could do, and now that I do have an agent, I realized that is the best advice really that anyone gave me, is,
yeah,
a bad agent can hurt your career in so many ways. And I do actually mean bad, not a bad fit, like in they're not a reputable agency. And then there's also just the personality fit of it. You can have a great agent who's very successful and has all those connections, but they're just not right for you and your project. And I think that that's another aspect that you really have to look at when you're trying to find the right match.
Oh, I think that that is, you know, so important as you go through the stages. And I think that there are, I feel like I just saw something on Twitter about somebody offering up, like, oh, hey, you know, if you want to, like, run your list of agents by me, you know, like, I'll let you know my experience with some of them, right? Like, you know, whether or not you should, like, you should query them or not, just based on their reputation. And I think, you know, doing your research and putting in that time up front can hopefully save you from some of those. But yeah, making sure that you're querying, you know, reputable people, but also agents that you could see yourself working with or who have done deals similar to what you're hoping for, and all that can definitely help the process go a little bit better.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I would just be lost without Jennifer.
Well, I'm so glad that you found, you know, your agent. That's always wonderful when you find the right one. My next question for you is a two-parter. I'd love to know for you and, you know, with your experience, what has been the hardest part of writing for you and the hardest part of being an author?
I would say that the hardest part of writing for me is figuring out what is going to happen next, because I know that I talked about querying being chaotic. The spoiler alert is that everything that I do in my entire life is chaotic. So, and that includes writing. So I will have a scene that I just really have stuck in my head, and I'll just go ahead and write it. And it doesn't matter if I've written chapter 2 and chapter 13 and,
yeah,
chapter 22. So when someone asks me part of the way through, can I have a description of what you're working on, or can I have a synopsis? I'm like, no. And the answer can't be no, because you have to have an idea, like, you know, for my agent or like an editor, you have to be able to tell people what you're working on. But sometimes it really is just a mess. So that's the hardest part for me. And then the hardest part of being an author in general, I think, is that I'm just very introverted and kind of a little stereotypical writer hermit. So going out and doing things like marketing, or especially if anybody wants me to film anything, that is just very stressful to me. So I would say, like, the personal aspects of it, that's very stressful. And I'm sure that's different for everybody just based off of, like, your temperament.
Oh, yeah. I think you're not alone in that one. I've heard from other authors that is, you know, a difficult part. And I write kind of similarly, too. With this last one I just drafted, I, you know, was started from the beginning, but then I knew what my midpoint was going to be, and I knew, you know, how I wanted it to end, so I wrote those first two, and I kind of liked it. It was good. I, like, had a goalpost knowing where I wanted to be, but yeah, that can make it a little bit more chaotic, but that's okay. That's just your process. Well, let me flip this question on you. So instead of the hardest parts, tell me the best part of being a writer and the best part of being an author.
I think that the best part is just getting, you know, to create. And I know how, like, stereotypical that might sound, but I love being able to just sit down and create something from scratch that just started as a very small kernel of an idea that I'll kind of kick around for a week or two, and then all of a sudden I'll think, okay, I think I have enough here, let's start writing. And then I can look back on it and go, wow, like, I've created this whole, like, society, or I've created this entire person, and that's just really magical. And I think the best part of being an author and having a book coming out is getting to put my book, like, into the hands of a young adult reader, and hopefully, like, they'll be able to see themselves in what I've written. I remember being, you know, a child and a teenager, and every once in a while there would be a book that just blew me away and I could really see myself in. And I connected with them so, like, it was so powerful. And I would just love if that happens even one time with something that I've written.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the dream, right? And why we, you know, create these worlds is, you know, the idea that you'll create that connection or give somebody else an escape from whatever might be going on in their lives. Those are some, I have memories like that too of childhood and certain books just sucking you in and you, like, don't want to stop reading it because you want to live in that world for longer.
Right. Or just even, seeing a character who really resonates with you or some kind of situation that maybe you can't talk to other people about, or maybe something you feel misunderstood about, and getting to see that in a book, then you go, okay, well, I'm not alone. I'm not really different because, look, here's this book. And that means that it's not just me. And I love that about YA.
Oh, yes. I think that is so wonderful. And I feel like there's so many more kinds of books out now than, you know, when, you know, we were younger, that there's a bigger chance for everybody to see themselves in a book.
Right.
Well, I love it. Well, I feel like you kind of gave me a little bit of insight into this next question already. But when you're drafting, you know, it sounds like you're kind of more of a pantser, but do you find yourself somewhat in between pantsing and planning?
I'm a super pantser. I'm all over the place. Normally I will write the big scenes, the really big dramatic ones that stick out to me very clearly in the beginning. And then I will try to kind of sew those together. And that's usually how I decide if I want to continue writing something or not. There are a lot of projects that I start and I go, I don't think there's enough here, and I just throw them away. The ones that I stick with, it's like I have those big kind of milestone chapters, and then everything in between still feels fun. It still feels like, okay, well, I could do this or I could do that. And it's like discovery along the way.
Yeah.
But I do kind of cheat a little bit because I use Save the Cat, where it's a novel, to check my plot beats when I'm done. So it's not so much that I'm like writing from an outline, it's just I want to make sure that the pacing is there when I'm done. So I will take my finished manuscript, compare it to kind of that writing method, and then say, okay, you know what, I think I skipped this part here, and that's why the arc's not working, and then I can go back and edit from there.
I don't think that's cheating at all. I'm very similar. While I'm not a full-on pantser anymore, I used to be, I do a little bit, you know, of plotting as I write. I really look at my beats afterwards, and I look at the arc, and I think you're like backwards outlining, which I think is a perfectly reasonable way to do it, and it works really well for me too. You know, I like this question because we all do it very differently and have our own processes, but you know, we all end up getting to that finish point, right, with a book. I just am always so curious to see how other people do it.
You know, and I hear a lot from people where we all have these very strong opinions.
Yes.
And I've heard from plotters, and they go, like, I cannot even begin to imagine what it must be like to just write with nothing. But then when I see people with, like, 500 color-coded post-it notes, I look at it, I'm like, oh, I can already feel, like, my blood pressure going up just looking at that. Like, I would never be able to deal with that. I would cry.
That is so funny. Yes, that we can be very, you know, have strong opinions about it, but you know what works for your process, like, it works for you. And yeah, I mean, if you try and do something different, like if I tried to outline super hardcore, I just wouldn't even write the book. My brain would be like, sorry, no, that's not how we do it. But you know, I think it's just so interesting, 'cause yeah, I know people who spend like 6 months on an outline and, you know, don't change from their outline. And I'm like, that makes me want to throw up a little bit. Like, I can't handle it.
Well, with planners, I think that they're also very upset to hear sometimes that I'll go through and just, I'll write, let's say, like 7,000 words, and I'll keep like 400 of them. And I think that for people who outline, that is just like devastating to them. And I'm like, well, you know, in pantsing, I'll try to go in one direction and then say, you know, I don't like this. I got to go back to my last kind of, I think of them as milestones in my head. I'll say, I have to go back to my last milestone where everything made sense and flowed well. And now I have to choose a different path and go from there to see if that makes more sense. So sometimes I'll do that two or three times and just delete multiple chapters over and over. And yeah, that causes some people to say that, you know, that they couldn't even imagine that with outlining, it's so precise that you can minimize some of that waste, but it just wouldn't work for me.
Yeah, when I, with the one novel that I completely pantsed, I had a lot of that too, where, you know, my characters would like give me this idea and we'd go in one direction, and then I'd have to be like, you guys, we are stuck in a corner. We have to backtrack our entire way out of here. And, you know, but it was fun. I love that part of the process, and I love the freedom and the excitement of just trying those different ways. You know, I think that if it works for you, it works for you, and you just got to own it and love it. Well, considering you're like a full-on pantser, tell me about your revision process. So when you're, you know, revising, and this would be, you know, before, tell me what you would do before you send it off to like your agent and your editor to make sure it's where you want it to be.
Well, okay, so first, like I said, I use Save the Cat, so I would run through that first just to check my major plot beats. And really, I guess I lied. My first step is there has to be tea and there must be lots of snacks.
Oh, yes.
That's the yes. first step of revising. Love there must it. Be animal crackers. There must Ooh, be tea.
Yum.
So, but then once my beats look like they're okay, I actually try to edit and revise in three different stages. Mm. So first I read everything start to finish. when I'm actually drafting. So if I'm on chapter 5, I'm going to at least skim everything that I have up until that point every time I start writing again. And it can be really, really fast, like 10 minutes.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that I have the whole thing in my head. And this way, if I change something in like chapter 10, I'll go back and revise as I'm writing that. I'll revise everything it affected previously.
Yeah.
Then once the whole manuscript is done, I'll read everything on my computer and make any changes there that I think, might need a little work or some tweaking. I will then read the entire thing out loud because I catch a lot of stuff that way, actually, like especially dialogue or like plot inconsistencies. And something about just having to say the words helps me recall. So I'll say, okay, well, this person here is going off on this, you know, side plot, and it's inconsistent with something that they thought or did on page 17. So I'm going to go back and change that now and bring their personality in a different way. And then I'll print it. And that always kills me because I feel like it's such a waste of paper. But having it in a different format again, I can read it and it feels like I'm looking at it with fresh eyes, even if it's the day after I just did another pass in a different format. So yeah. That's kind of one of my tricks that helps me see plot holes or like developmental problems. It's just kind of looking at it from as many different angles as I can. And one of the ways is just the format I read it in.
I love that. I do the same thing. I print it out and yes, it does feel like I'm wasting lots of trees, but there's something so important to me about seeing it in that different format. I like to, you know, look through it in the program I'm writing it in, have it on physical paper, and then I like to read it on like my phone through the Kindle app or something. That helps me to just catch different errors. I applaud you and love that you read it out loud. If I tried to do that, I would never get through a revision. I don't think I do my revising in like little snippets and late at night or early in the morning when all my children are leaving me alone. But, you know, I have found that that is super helpful. If I have a scene or something that feels off to me, I will read out little pieces of the project. But yeah, I don't know that I could ever read the whole thing through, but I know that that is super helpful. I've heard that from lots of different people.
Yeah, I tend to like lose my voice if I try to do it even for maybe 2 or 3 hours at a time.
Yeah.
So I can't do it all in one day or I would definitely not be able to talk by the end of it.
Yeah, I've heard some people too that have like a program that on their computer that reads it to them. But I wonder like how natural that sounds, you know, or if it sounds like creepy computer voice.
For me, it's not so much about the like hearing it, it's about actually speaking it that makes some of these things stick out to me a little more and kind of focus my attention on them. So having a computer read it to me, I don't think that would have the same effect.
Yeah, it wouldn't if you, what you're needing is to actually speak it. And I love that too. I just think that there's so many different things we can do to break ourselves of the monotony of reading your words over and over again, because I think just gloss over the issues or the weird, you know, phrasing in the sentence or the spelling error because you've seen it so many times. So it's good to look at it in as many different formats or speak it so that you're really paying attention to the words that are actually there. Well, thank you for sharing that. I love knowing people's revision processes too. And, you know, maybe for those people listening who maybe are stuck on a revision, don't know what to do next, always good to get some ideas from other people.
True. I mean, I've kind of absorbed these ideas from other people along the way. Like, I didn't discover this myself by any stretch. I have friends who contributed bits and pieces like, oh, well, I read it out loud and I understand more, or, oh, I print it. And then I've also heard people say that they take their manuscripts and they go somewhere else. Like they'll go to like a coffee shop, or I mean, I know that with the pandemic, this is much more difficult, but
yeah.
That they'll just go somewhere else. To me, I'm the opposite. I like to revise in the same place that I wrote if I can, just somewhere I feel very comfortable and relaxed, which is usually like in my bed or something. And that just helps me feel more creative, but, you know, to each their own.
Yeah, definitely to each their own. And I think, too, the part of this is similar to the writing process. Like, it might be very different from what you see somebody else do, but, you know, what works for you, and don't, like, judge yourself too, I guess, harshly, or, you know, make yourself feel bad if you're doing it differently from somebody else. There's no right way in writing. Like, whatever way you're doing is the right way for you.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing those. Definitely some good tips there. My next thing, Bethany, I'd love for you to share with me something your readers wouldn't necessarily know about you.
So I guess my go-to, like, fun or weird fact is that when I'm not writing, my other hobby is cake decorating.
Yes. I love that.
And it's very out of character for me. Like, I remember when I started doing it, my mom said, you know, you're the last person I thought would have kind of like the interest and the patience to do this, because when it comes to artwork, I am tragically bad. Like, I can't draw you a smiley face. It's awful. So, like, having no talent with drawing or painting or anything like that, it was really odd that I just kind of out of the blue one day thought, like, I would like to learn how to decorate cakes, and then practiced a lot and realized, like, I was actually getting pretty good at it. So I still have moments where I say that my hobby is baking questionable cakes, because they either come out great or they are awful blobs of frosting and cake and fondant, and it's a mess. So, but I do really like it, and being able to, like, feel creative without needing, I guess, like, the eye and the coordination of working in something like painting.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, cake decorating is not an easy thing. I made a cake for my daughter's 10th birthday, and I had to make it twice, because the first time I made this one cake recipe that I had made before, it, like, totally fell apart on me, and the cake was, like, falling to one side. It was all crumbly, and I was so mad. I mean, because it takes so long to just even bake the cake and let it cool, and you make all this frosting. There's powdered sugar everywhere. I have great respect for people who have the patience and do all of that, you know, for a business or just for fun. I love watching those videos, like, on my phone. It's very relaxing to me to watch the video, not to actually do it myself so much. But I love that. That is such a fun thing to do. And I imagine is, you know, can be, you know, really relaxing just as a different outlet for your art, right?
Yeah. I cheat and I use fondant versus, like, a frosting of any kind. So it's basically like sugar Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Because I'm a child. So that's just really fun, and it appeals to me too, because if I make something and it doesn't work out right, I can always just roll it back up into a ball and try again. If you make a mistake with frosting, it's a lot more difficult to fix.
Yeah.
So fondant is very forgiving in that regard. So I have a tendency to be a perfectionist. So being able to kind of redo it is very comforting and allows me to relax and not worry that I'm going to ruin this cake or make a mistake or whatever, because you know, these take me probably around 5 to 7 hours.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing something that seems like, oh no, this could be really bad if I make a mistake, I don't want to ruin, like, 5 hours of work.
Yeah. Oh, I fondant scares me. I bought some, and I was going to use it for my daughter's birthday cake, but I got too scared. I was scared that I was going to mess up the fondant, so I just did, you know, sort of like a very, you know, hip type of, like, whatever, like, naked type of cake where you could see some of the cake through the frosting, because I was too scared of the fondant. But maybe I'll give it a shot, because, yeah, that makes me feel better that I could just roll it up in a ball if I mess up with
it.
Well, that's awesome. That's such a great talent, and, you know, I hope you, do you share video, like, pictures of stuff of what you make?
I mean, I send it to my friends, but I don't, like, put it on Instagram or anything like that. Mostly I just send them to my family and my friends.
Well, awesome. If you make a really good one, I'd love to see. You can email it to me so that it you know, stays private. But I love that sort of thing. I love cake baking and decorating. It's one of my goals to get better at it. But, I mean, there's not a lot of reasons to make a cake nowadays except for birthdays, I guess.
I know, and plus people are really nervous, I think, about eating anything right now that has been made by somebody else just because of the pandemic. And so, you know, unfortunately, I have so much because I'm so used to baking often that when the pandemic hit, I looked in my pantry and went, oh man, I have so much in here and I don't think I'm going to be able to use it because what would I do? I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, I know. And it's just like probably an excessive amount of cake for you to eat, you know?
it definitely is.
Well, lovely. I love that. I love that talent, that little hobby. So you mentioned before, you know, that you started querying around a really young age. Tell me a little bit about when your love of writing began. Like, when do you remember that moment when you knew you wanted to be an author?
At the risk of sounding like, you know, kind of cliche, I guess, I've always wanted to do it. Even before I knew how to physically write, I was telling stories to my grandmother and she would write them down and I would draw the pictures for them. So when I was like, you know, three.
Yeah, I love that.
And I still have them and they make no sense. It's like a whale that came out of the ocean at midnight and ate skyscrapers and like a superhero bunny and his superhero bunny bride and they get married and there's a big wedding. So yeah, they don't make a whole lot of sense, but I do still have them. And so that was really from the very beginning, that was what I enjoyed doing. I just liked that kind of creativity. And, you know, my dad is a very, very big reader. So he was always taking me to the library and, you know, helping me pick out books. And I remember if you went into my library, the way it was laid out when I was a child, there was this very short shelf and all the books were yellow because it was all the Curious George books. And that just felt really magical, being able to pick out anything, because when you think about it as a kid, you know, your choices are always limited to, like, you can eat these foods that I bought for you, or you can wear these clothes from this section. It's like, it was very odd, I think, to just, as a child, to get told you can pick out anything in this entire building, go. And how exciting that was, and getting to just go and kind of explore and choose what I wanted to read. And I mean, obviously, like, if I had picked out something like inappropriate for my age or something, they would have told me no. But, you know, my parents didn't really limit me in that regard. They just kind of let me go and choose whatever I wanted, and, you know, and go there often enough that I really fell in love with the idea of stories and what they could mean, and just kind of escaping into a book. And, you know, I was the person who literally stayed up all night, like, under the covers with this little flashlight that was built into my alarm clock, reading so I wouldn't get in trouble for staying up late. And so it's just been my whole life.
I love it. I mean, I remember that feeling of being in the library. And I would go down to the library in downtown Portland at a young age. Like, I would never let my children go at the age that I went by myself on a train. But I remember even at that age, you know, going through the library and being like, I can read anything in here. And I love taking my kids, and they love to run around, and I feel like they get overwhelmed by how many books there are. Like, oh my gosh, I can't choose from all of these. But, you know, there's something so magical about books and about storytelling, and I love that it's, you know, been something that's been a part of you for forever. That's so wonderful that your grandma would help you create those stories, even if they don't make a whole lot of sense. That's a really good memory to have. Well, I have just one last question for you. I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now, not your favorite book of all time, just something you've read recently that, like, you want to tell all your friends about.
So I actually haven't been reading much because of I guess just the pandemic and feeling like I was in a little bit of a slump. It just wasn't feeling super creative. I didn't even want to watch TV all that much. But the one book that I did read, it's actually the last thing I finished, was The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, which is perfect timing because the prequel is coming out, which is totally coincidental. And I finished it and I just sat back and went like, wow. It's just wow. So I was just speechless. Like even now I can't even describe like the feeling of it, of reading something that is so powerful that will help so many like young readers like see themselves and like just a true depiction of so many important issues that are affecting like us as a society today. Like it blew me away. Like that there was, and I'm so happy to see these books coming out into the world where we are not limiting young readers to, to fantasy and like very happy kind of, alternate worlds or, like, oh, that this is not something that you can read because you're young. And that was something that I really appreciated is that here is a book that is so important and is addressing so many important issues, but also that it's catering to a young audience without talking down about these things and or treating young readers like they can't talk about, they can't have a dialogue, that they can't engage with what's going on in the world around them. Because that was one of my complaints as a child, is I felt like we never talked about things or had books really that addressed so many different elements of what we were seeing in the world around us, that instead we were getting pushed more towards, fiction that took us somewhere else, or, like The Lion, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, for example, right? Which was a series that I read growing up. Like, yes, it was super interesting and exciting to me as a kid. But it was also in an entirely different world, and I wanted something that was, I guess, more significant and more relatable and relevant to my everyday life. And there were very few books that I felt accomplished that. So when I finished The Hate U Give, I just thought, like, I'm so happy to see a shift in young adult literature where we're encouraging young readers to read broadly and kind of open their, like, expand their horizons. I know that's also very cliché to say, but
No, I love that. I think that that shift in the, the market and the stories that are now being prioritized, which I think is so great, is for the better and allows so many more people to see themselves in the books, like we were talking about earlier, but also to, yeah, deal with these issues that that kids deal with. The kids see these things, I feel like they are dealing with things at even younger and younger ages as the generations go on. So I think having them represented in their literature is really important too. I love that.
right, and that's really like aside from just like the writing and the story, that was also something that really stuck out to me was, the strides that have been taken in publishing and a change in the way that we're looking at what's right, for young adults, and that it's really important that they have a choice, and it's not just, oh, you have these this very narrow selection of what you're allowed to read because it's what we think you should be reading, and here's something that reflects your reality, and you can engage with whatever you want. Because look, there's so many different types of works out there. There's so many different ideas that are being put forward, and not having such a limited view of what, young people should read, because young people, I mean, that's an enormous group of so many different, you know, groups, that there's no way that you could say this one book here, that book there is right for everyone, because that's not true.
Yeah, no, you're so right on that. And I love, I haven't read that book, but it's on my list. I mean, I have just, like, the most soul-crushing to-be-read list ever. It's, like, a whole bookshelf.
Oh, I do, too.
It's like a whole bookshelf of books, but, you know, I love this question, because we could talk about books forever and our favorite books, but it's so nice to get, you know, recommendations from people, and hearing someone talk about the book they, you know, love right now is my favorite to hear. So thank you for sharing that. Bethany, thank you so much for chatting with me today and telling me all about your novel, Prepped, and letting me and my listeners get to know you a little bit better.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really enjoyed, you know, getting to talk about kind of how I grew up with writing and how I've reached this point with Prepped coming out in a month, which still seems so surreal to me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please make sure you go and give Bethany some love. Support Prepped and make her debut day really special. And as always, please rate and review this podcast where you find it. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss any episodes. And find me on Instagram and Twitter @RoseQuinney, QUINNY. See you next time.